Throughout history, freethinkers have outraged the religious with their wacky ideas about the virtues of free speech, reason, and of course, eating babies. Now, God is dying, and it's time to dispose of his remains. From the pits of hell, Satan sends two puppets of the imperialist West and the Zionist Jews against God, Islam, and tiny kittens to bring you their propaganda and conspire for a new world order. This is Secular Jihadists for a Muslim Enlightenment with Ali Rizvi and Armin Navabi.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Secular Jihadists for a Muslim Enlightenment. My name is Ali Rizvi, and with me is Armin Navabi. Armin, how are you today?
I'm good. You are roboty for me, but I'm assuming you're not roboty for other people.
Am I roboty? Do I sound choppy? Let me know.
You might sound choppy.
I'm kind of seeing myself jumping here and there, so...
Is anybody hearing Ali? It's okay. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
If it's a problem, then we'll get it fixed.
Yeah, if I don't hear you, I'll just ask you to repeat yourself. Okay, right. Cool.
So
chat is saying it sounds fine, so you're just roboty only to me, which is amazing.
Okay, and I want to start by saying happy Atheist Day, Armin. It is Atheist Day.
Oh, yeah, I think you just said it's Atheist Day. Yes, it is Atheist Day. Atheist Day.
You froze for a second. I saw you.
Oh, so it's my connection.
It might be, yeah. Oh, how the tables turn.
But you can hear me.
But yeah, it is Atheist Day. For those who don't know, March 23rd is International Atheist Day. It was designated that way. So, you know, for everybody out there, you know, atheists having the right to not believe and having the right to speak up about it. And atheism is still... persecuted. They're still one of the most persecuted minorities and one of the most really denigrated minorities in the world, right? So across the Muslim world, where Armin and I came from, there are still 12 countries in the world who punish atheism by death, capital punishment, simply for not believing in a God. It's pretty much officially required for you to be able to run for office in some places. Even in places like the U.S., it's not officially required, but, you know, if you say you're an atheist, there's no way you're going to win an election. It's really, really important for us to keep on talking about it and humanize and normalize atheism. So that's a super important thing. So happy Atheist Day to everybody who is an atheist and rationalist.
Anyways, let's get to the point. And yes, please make sure if you're listening to this live, I mean, it's too late if you're listening to this later, but use the hashtag Atheist Day to celebrate Atheist Day.
Yeah.
Cool.
So yeah, today we're going to get into something really interesting. This is going to be a learning experience for me because what we're going to talk about today is something that I can't really find on any of the mainstream media, at least English sources, okay? So a lot of this is going to be Armin talking about what's happening in Iran. So in Iran, you know, the current president, Rouhani, is his time is up. There's an election in June. He's done his maximum amount of time as president. And there is going to be a new president elected in June, right? And also, you know, the aging supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, he's going to, you know, there's a lot of people who are anticipating he's going to die soon. They're already thinking about his successorship, and we're going to get into that. But the way that things are happening this time is that the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, is beginning to have a much more important role. In fact, almost a dominant role, which was against the whole vision of the Islamic Republic that Khomeini had at the time of the revolution. So anyway, I'm not going to go into this. This is something that Armin's going to talk about. There's a lot of chatter about this. There's a lot of people are talking about this, is concerned about it. It's almost an open secret, but it's not being reported anywhere in the media. So Armin, what's going on and why aren't we seeing stories about it?
Well, I don't know why you're not. Well, I am seeing a lot of stories about it.
In English.
I don't know why you're not. I don't know why there's not much stories in English, but this is right now a major thing in Persian news media. There is a shift happening, a major shift happening. And everybody knows about it from, like, I mean, at least from the Iranian media side. And it seemed like every time I watch, you know, Western YouTubers or media talk about it, there seems to be a lot of the important points missing, or it just seems like people don't really care much anymore. So I don't know where to start, because I have a lot of points to bring up. So maybe we should start with the basics.
Say the only thing that I read about it that was close to the stuff that you told me about earlier, we talked about this offline, is this thing on Middle East Forum. This guy, Ali Alfone, who's a senior fellow at the Arab Gulf States Institute. And the title of the article is that Ali Alfone says that the IRGC will dictate the choice of Iran's next supreme leader. So, you know, that was kind of interesting. But again, a very, very, forum or anything, very general.
Right. So let's actually start with the basics. I think a lot of our audience already know this. Rouhani is the president. Khamenei is the supreme leader. You know, Rouhani is supposed to be representing the reformists, but not quite so. The reformists' main leader used to be Khatami. So the way people traditionally thought about this is that you had on one side the hardliners, which is supposed to be Khamenei as the supreme religious leader of the country, and you know, people assumed Ahmadinejad is on that side. And the IRGC, which is the more idealistic side of the armed forces in Iran, and all of that considered to be the hardliners. And that's on one side. And then you assumed that you had the reformists, which is Khatami, Rouhani, which is the president, and his cabinet to be on the other side, right? However, that's not the way things were viewed from inside Iran, and now that's not how things are, even, you know, even pragmatically, that's not how things are anymore, again, as well, right? So it's interesting, because a couple of months before this elections, the main person that was being a headache to the hardliners was Ahmadinejad. He was becoming enemy number one in the country, which is like against Khamenei. And he's now coming out and saying that he expects to be executed, like to be assassinated soon. That's what he's saying. So the person that was supposed to be the chosen president before Rouhani as the hardliners president is now one of the people that is causing the regime the most amount of headache, right? For way before this election, when you saw in the protests, you know, many protests that we saw, you know, earlier in 2019 and also in 2020, people have given up on reformists. Reformists are hated almost by everyone, right? By a lot of the people and also by the hardliners. In the eyes of many of the protesters, the reformers are just a false hope that are put to place by the hardliners just to get people come out and vote. Because a higher number of votes, a higher percentage of votes gives legitimacy to the Islamic Republic of Iran as a legitimate democracy around the world, as a government that is a representative of its people. So the idea among many of the people who are against the regime from inside Iran is that the reformists can't do anything. They have absolutely no power. And the presidency as a whole is a joke position that has nothing to do with anything. And all the orders come from the top, which is the supreme leader, Khamenei. And that's the whole... The reformists are just dangled in front of the people every time there is an election, just so that you have this fake democracy, you know, as a way to show to the world that this government represents the people. So you need to listen to this government, because in the way that international politics works, a lot of times when a foreign government want to dismiss you as somebody that they need to work with, they're like, well, you're not, you don't represent your people anyways. So if you want, like, for example, if you're a country like United States and you want to tell your people why you're being aggressive against this, the government, you're like, and not against the people, you're like, well, these people don't represent their people, and this government doesn't represent their people anyway. So it gives you international legitimacy, and it's the number of people that actually come out in election was a number that was very important to the governments, to the Islamic Republic for a long time. However, what is being suggested is that in recent, given what happened in the elections during the parliament in Iran, given the lack of show and the constant suggestion that, you know, less and less people are going to come and participate in elections, it seems like this idea of acting like if democracy, they're like maybe that's not that important, right? Given that that's signaling that is not doing what it's supposed to do anyways, both internally and externally, we might as well take over, right? Like both in practice, but now also officially, right? So like, let me give you some examples, right? So the understanding is that, for example, in the previous elections, when Ahmadinejad became the president, he became the president not because people voted for him. He was elected president because he was selected by Mujtaba Khamenei. Mujtaba Khamenei's first pick was Qalibaf, but then they had some... Mujtaba Khamenei is Ali Khamenei's son. And the understanding right now is that he is the one that Khamenei wants to make the next supreme leader, which would be amazing because that would mean that the supreme leader position is going to go back to how it was during the monarchy, meaning that it's going to become heredity, like based on what from one generation to another, which is amazing because that was one of the main things Khomeini was against, right? The fact that the way the leaders are picked, right? And Mujtaba Khomeini was the person that selected Ahmadinejad initially to become president, right? And the understanding is that the elections really don't matter. What Mujtaba Khamenei picks matters. And this whole idea of picking Mujtaba Khamenei as the next supreme leader, if they're successful at it, goes against what Khomeini was preaching when he started when he toppled the Shah, the monarchy back in 1979.
Yeah. So can we go through that? I know you're about to go through it, but in addition to that, can we just go back to basics for some of the people who are not familiar? So, you know, what was Khomeini's vision? What was this whole concept of the guardianship of the jurist, or about the separation of the republic from the IRGC and the military aspect? And
yeah, I was going to go through that.
Yeah, and typically, I think if they have the assembly of experts, right, that elected, like Khamenei was elected by this assembly of experts. It wasn't the IRGC, right? But it seems like the IRGC is kind of getting in everywhere. So how did that change happen? And why is it being accepted? You know what I mean?
So there are many things. So here's the thing. When at the beginnings of the 1979 of Islamic Revolution, there seemed to be the suggestion was that this is going to be a multi-party government where everybody's represented. But at some point, it was Khomeini managed to completely silence and annihilate all the oppositions and become the supreme leader, right? And the way he structured the constitution was made it seem like everybody is being picked by the people, but you can see that the people who choose the supreme leader are picked by the people who the supreme leader chooses. So it's a circular thing. But I don't want to get too much into that. I do want to go to the relationship between the supreme leader and IRGC. Okay, that is the most important thing here. Okay, so when at the beginning of the revolution, a lot of people came to Khomeini and they told him to dismantle the military, which is called the Artesh, right? The Artesh is the part of the military, the armed forces in Iran, that it predates the Islamic Revolution. It was also the armed forces during Shah's time. It's a very old institution, right? And Khomeini, for some reason, decided not to get rid of the Artesh. So the Artesh stayed. The reason, but the Artesh was a threat to Khomeini because the Artesh switched to Khomeini's side only at the very end. Okay, so it was always a threat to Khomeini because these people are armed. They could decide at any moment to change allegiances and do a coup. So instead of completely getting rid of the Artesh, Khomeini created a parallel armed force group, which was called Sepah-e Pasdaran, or as we know it in English, the IRGC, right? By the way, it's not just IRGC. Almost everything in Iran, every institution, because they didn't do a Gaddafi where they completely dismantle everything, all the institutions that the Shah had, and started from scratch, because I think they rightly realized that that will completely paralyze the country if they do that, right? But instead of completely dismantling everything and building it from scratch, they created parallel institutions to everything that was already there, a more idealistic version of it, right? A more religious fundamental, one that was less about Iran and more about Islam, right? Which is very interesting because if you look at the entire name of the IRGC, there's no mention of Iran in their name, right? And there's no mention of Iran in their mission. It's about Islam, right? But the main point, what the reason why the IRGC was built as a parallel group of armed forces next to the Artesh was an anti-coup measure. That was Khomeini's main reason why he decided to make the IRGC, right? He, however, was quite worried that the IRGC also one day doesn't become a source of coup itself, which is very interesting because we have recorded speeches of him, of Khomeini. By the way, for people who are new here, maybe Khomeini is a person who's dead, who started the Islamic Revolution. He was the original supreme leader. Khamenei is the one who's the supreme leader now. Okay,
that's for people who don't know that are not going to be. They're probably not listening to this anyway. So, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, am I freezing for anybody?
Your audio is clear and continuous. Your video.
Okay. So don't complain, guys. Please don't tell me in the live chat about my video because the audio is more important here. Okay. It's going to distract you. Where was I? Oh, yeah. So IRGC. So there are speeches of Khomeini specifically saying that he has heard that the IRGC is talking politics. Right? And he's like, cut that out, right? He specifically told them to cut that out. Stay away from politics. You have no business meddling in politics in any way.
Oh, my God. Right? Well, he looks like the good guy now.
Yeah. And not only he said that before he did, he put it in his will even. This seemed to be one of his main concerns. He put it in his will to remind people that the IRGC needs to step away from politics. That's not their thing. That's not their responsibility. Okay? But right after Khomeini died, the IRGC got into business, both figuratively and literally. By literally, I mean real business, as in they control 60% of the economy in Iran now. Something that Khomeini was really paranoid about actually happened to a much greater degree than Khomeini ever imagined, right? So
How do they control 60% of the economy? In what way?
Well, because they started buying, corruption, bribery, taking over different institutions, buying shares for cheaper than they're supposed to be, given nepotism. A lot of it also, the sanctions really helped also, because lack of competition with foreign institutions managed to give them monopoly. They have their tentacles over every place in Iran's economy, right? By the way, the 60% that I'm saying, some people disagree. Some people say 30%, some people say 60%, some people say even in the places that they don't own, they have some control. And people like keep finding their names as shareholders in places that nobody even expected. So this number, I have to be transparent, this number is like numbers that come out is all over the place, right? But whatever that number is, they have a major source of influence, like a major, major source of influence and monopoly over a lot of different industries in Iran, okay? Not only, this is also understood not only inside Iran, but also outside of Iran, that foreign policy is controlled not by the presidency and its foreign minister, Zarif, and he's just a spokesperson for things that the IRGC does, and then he has to come and explain after. The IRGC decides what to do in the region without even letting Zarif know. And Zarif has to like come and try to figure out what to tell the world after he sees that something is happening on the news wrong with the rest of the world. So basically, when it comes to foreign policy, we can see that it's the IRGC that decides what Iran does outside of its borders, which is completely outside of control of the foreign ministry or the presidency as a whole, right? Which is very interesting because in the previous election, Rouhani was complaining that Rouhani was public. This is a red line that Rouhani crossed, I think, to get more votes. And I think some people warned him about him because he never said that again. He said, like, the people who own the guns are the people who are controlling everything, right? A country cannot be run like this, right? And he was basically subtweeting the IRGC, like without saying IRGC, is like saying like they control everything. What are you supposed to do, right? Yeah. Right. And
well, I'm actually really interested in how they built this much power, the IRGC. So I get that, like, from the revolution, that they had a big part in the Iran-Iraq war, right? The IRGC were the heroes of the Iranian public during the Iran-Iraq war, okay? Now, how much of this has to do with the IRGC's focus shifting from basically fighting foreign enemies, like in the Iran-Iraq war, to fighting domestic protesters? Like, usually with domestic protests and everything, I mean, didn't they initially have the besieged militia there and everything? But then eventually the IRGC got involved, and now there's a lot of public mistrust of the IRGC domestically within Iran. Like, Iranians, they have, a lot of them have problems with the IRGC. Am I getting choppy for you, or can you hear me clearly?
I can barely hear you, but it's fine. I can get what you're saying. So, yeah.
The basic thing is, like, their focus going from foreign to domestic, right? And not only fighting foreign enemies, but also oppressing the people of Iran.
Okay, so their main goal was to be an anti-coup measure, right? Their main influence in foreign policy before used to be the creation and training of Hezbollah in Lebanon, right? It used to be that most of their other foreign, it wasn't that they're doing foreign policy, only after the Saddam's fall, they managed to become this influential in foreign policy, right? Because most of their other initiatives outside of Iran's border had failed before Saddam's removal. But now, after Saddam's removal, with all the connections they had built outside of Iran's border, they managed to become such a major force outside of Iran's border after that, right? But before that, their main success was the creation and training of Hezbollah in Lebanon, right? That was it. That was mainly it. So there are some other activities, assassinations and terrorist activities, other places that are also you could mention. But the IRGC has five sections, fractions, I don't know what you want to call them. It's basically the IRGC's what it's called, Marine, like Air Force, Ground Force, and then the IRGC's foreign, intelligence plus militia activity, which is called Quds, right? So you have basically Quds, ground, air, navy, and the last one is the besiege.
So it's a combination. It's like a combination.
These are the five.
Yeah, so it's like a combination of a military and intelligence organization, right? And also like the economic power.
Yes, actually you're right.
That's a hell of a lot of power.
Yes. Like the Quds branch, if you think about Quds, it's kind of like their CIA, but imagine if CIA had its own military, right? It's intelligence. Quds is like a mix of intelligence plus they have their own troops. Besiege is basically armed militia inside the country, like people who don't even wear military clothing, but they go around and are supposed to suppress people who are anti-regime inside the country itself. Imagine like the other branch. Imagine if like the Pentagon owned like most of Amazon, Google, Facebook, Exxon, and every like the most major companies in the United States was majority shareholder of it was Pentagon, right? So it's like you have this kind of situation, right? They control for and they control like a lot of the foreign policy, when it comes to some major issues, you can see that Khamenei doesn't even. By the way, Iran has two intelligence agencies: one under the presidency, which is part of the government, and another intelligence agency, which is under IRGC. Right. So again, parallel one organization. One of them being more ideological than the other one. Right. But you can see, like, when it comes to media consumption for the world, you can see that the foreign ministry is sent to talk to people, but when it comes to actual serious deals that represents Khamenei's views, you can see Khamenei sends other people. It used to be when things really need to get done, Soleimani was being sent, right? Qasem Soleimani was the deal maker in the region. He was like Khamenei's lion in the region, and his word went like what he said, the deals that he made with people mattered a lot more than whatever the foreign ministry said, right? He was the hero, like, so yes, and he represented Quds basically, right? So they slowly got take over the economy, and now so we have, what do we have? We have armed forces controlled by IRGC, like a lot of it. Foreign policy, a lot of it is controlled by IRGC. A lot of the economy is controlled by the IRGC. And now they want to take over the main part, the part of the government that they don't have control over, which is the presidency, right? But some people in Iran say, like, you know what? Nothing is changing because what's changing is they going from having control behind this the curtain to having control publicly, right? Like, it's not like some people are saying it's effectively not going to change. Now everybody's going to see how everything has been. I don't know. I don't think so. I think like actually taking over the presidency might even increase their control. They recently had reports out showing that they were very, like, this is from the IRGC itself. This they publicly published this, right? That they are very concerned about the Generation Z, and controlling Generation Z in Iran is going to be a lot more difficult than previous generation before it, right? So this whole idea of people not showing up for elections might be an excuse to be like, well, we might as well use this as an opportunity to just take over the presidency as well, right? yeah, so The way that people should look at this instead of reformists versus hardliners is that you have to look at it as the shift between from the mullahs to the military people, right? And it's hard for people to imagine that because they usually considered the IRGC and the mullahs at the same part of the same hardliners, right? So the shift of power is not going from the reformers to the hardliners. The reason why the shift of power is not going from the reformers to the hardliners is because the reformers didn't have any power to begin with for there to be a shift. Right? So the shift of power is happening from the mullahs to the people from the people that used to wear turbans to the people that wear boots, basically. Right? This is the way that.
So you're saying that. Like they already have power, so this is a military. This is Iran's premier military force, premier intelligence force. You know, the premier economic power, owning like what 30, 60, whatever percent of the economy. And now they're going to pretty much dictate the election and who becomes president, right? But aren't they also going to? Aren't they sort of taking over the whole concept of the supreme leader as well? I mean, how are they, if they're going to select the next supreme leader, essentially, and even when they do, that next supreme leader is not going to be a supreme leader. The IRGC is going to be the supreme leader, and the new supreme leader is going to be beholden to them.
One step at a time, right? Right now, they're going for presidency, right? If Mujtaba Khamenei, this is why Mujtaba Khamenei is so close to the IRGC, right? And if Mujtaba Khamenei becomes the supreme leader, the takeover of IRGC will become complete. So here's the thing. A lot of people say that the IRGC is very loyal to Khamenei, right? Religiously loyal to Khamenei. But some people say, like, maybe that's, like, that kind of is a show. It might be the other way around, right? Like, because at the end of the day, right, the people who have the guns, you know, they are the real leaders, right? Like, maybe it's Khamenei is there. Yeah. So, but with Mujtaba, this whole, the blurry line between who's in charge might actually become less blurry because Mujtaba himself is extremely connected to the IRGC. He's one of them. He's part of them. He was part, you know, so right now they're going for the presidency and eventually they might go for the supreme leader. And just like, here's actually a clue for why this might actually be true, right? Like I said, Mujtaba Khamenei, which is Ali Khamenei's son, he picked Ahmadinejad to be president, right? Allegedly. there's WikiLeaks and stuff like of this, by the way, out there, right? So I'm not just pulling this out of nowhere. However, he is the one right now who seems to be, again, allegedly, wanting to pick the next president, who is Saeed Mohammed, right? Saeed Mohammed has, so many people said that this is the guy that they're going to push. And it's very interesting because Ali Khamenei came out and gave speeches about who he wants to be as the next president. And if you keep, he didn't mention any names, he doesn't. But if you just narrow down everything that he wants, it just comes down to nobody other than Saeed Mohammed. Okay.
No, I'm saying that. Okay, I get that. But I'm saying that. Sure, you know, Mujtaba Khamenei is really into the IRGC. Sorry, you froze for a second. You got to let me know if I get choppy for you.
Just keep talking. Just talk.
Okay. So Mujtaba Khamenei is a big fan. Like he's like this with the, I'm crossing my fingers here, like, you know, they're intertwined with the IRGC, totally aligned. But what's going to happen is once they take different roles, and this happens a lot, Armin, in governments, is like, you know, even people are totally aligned, they put their person in there. At some point, they will have some sort of disagreement, like, you know, Bush and Cheney, right? When they do have a disagreement, and I'm just saying, okay, theoretically or practically, right? You have the supreme leader, and then you have the IRGC that have a disagreement. Isn't the IRGC going to pretty much trump whatever the supreme leader says? Like, if they have this much power, right? If they are the ones who selected the president, if they're the ones who are essentially selecting the supreme leader too, right? the supreme leader is going to be, is no longer really the supreme leader. Like the IRGC is king. And again, the IRGC has the guns. If it comes down to a showdown between the two, how does the IRGC not win the showdown? How does it not win the showdown?
Well, what you're saying, again, a lot of this is happening behind the curtain. So this is basically what we're saying here is based on suggestions of few information that keeps leaking out, right? Okay. What you're saying is a lot of analysts and experts, what they're suggesting is not something that is about to happen. Some people say that's how it is right now.
It's inevitable. Well, I mean, it is.
It's not inevitable. It's already like that. Like people say it is IRGC right now is in control of everything. It's already like that. Right. Everything else is a show. And different people, different analysts agree with this to different degrees, right? Like nobody completely denies that. Some people might be exaggerating how much that is, but to some levels, some people like, yeah, it's a little bit like that. Some people are like, no, it's a lot like that, right? But what you're suggesting is something that people are like, no, what are you talking about, Ali? Some people might come and say, you're saying it's going to become like that. They're going to be the kingmakers. They're going to be controlled. Like, that's how it is right now. Everything else is a show right now. Okay. I'm not saying how much I buy into how much.
Yeah, but it'll be open, Armin.
Oh, like, yes. Yeah.
Be open, right? Like it already is. I think the main thing here right now is what we're talking about is that the mask is coming off. They don't care about these superficial shows of where democracy and a republic and we're going to have this election. They're basically openly going about doing it. I mean, everybody's talking about it. The assembly of experts is not going to elect the next supreme leader. That the IRGC
You're going to pretend like they are.
Right, but it's still it's going to be more of a formality than it ever was before.
So see, here's the thing. Here's why.
One more thing, and I don't know. I'm not as in tune with the whole Iranian situation as you are. So this is like a novice asking questions because I'm just really, really fascinated by this. But for instance, right, when you had domestic issues, usually they throw you had the Basiji militia, right? The besieged that would go around and deal with all the domestic uprisings and issues. And then recent protests, the IRGC got involved. That's something that they didn't used to do before. So it became open.
So no, Ali, the Basij is part of IRGC.
It is, I know, but it was like, it's still a different entity.
No, it's not. The Basij is the IRGC. It's part of the IRGC. So what happened recently that was different is the Artesh got involved. The Artesh used to keep its hands clean. Okay.
Yeah.
The Artesh used to keep his hands clean from oppressing people. And recently, they came in and said that they are involved in oppressing people, protesters, and they pulled an Ali Dava. They said they're proud of it. They're also they say, yes, we oppress people. Like we're in line with the IRGC in shutting people down when they are when they protest, and we are proud of it. So they did. They openly said that recently. So basically, the Artesh is like, basically, Artesh was trying to signal to the people, if the people who are against the regime are hoping a divide between the Artesh and the IRGC, if you're hoping a coup, if you're hoping that the Artesh is more in line with the people against the hardliners, and at some point you're going to find some generals in the Artesh that is going to not be in line with the supreme leader, like, you know, keep dreaming. We are in line with them and screw the people, I guess. Right. So, but here's the thing. I really want to mention this, Ali. So, I wanted to mention that. Okay, so I was that's the suggestion, because you have to give it to some of these analysts, right? Because here, I want to be skeptical. I always like listen to these analysts, you know, the Persian media and the suggestions that people have. And I'm like, well, you're basing, like, how much do you really know? Like, you're basing off leak information. Where do you get, okay, WikiLeaks, okay, like, but they kept on telling, us that, oh yeah, Sayyid Muhammad is gonna come, he's Khamenei's pick, and he's the guy who's gonna, like, this is that time that the only person that had announced he's gonna run was Dehqan, right? And then eventually, like, say my man, like, nobody, like, who the hell is this guy? Nobody knows who this guy is, right? And hey, surprise, surprise, the same people that the analyst told us that Mujtaba has picked to become president came out and said that he's resigned from his position in IRGC and that he's going to run for presidency, right? And we're like, oh, wow, okay, so these people were right. But it's amazing because right after he resigned, he was rehired by IRGC as an advisor. So he's still connected to the IRGC, right? So here, by the way, right now, if you look at all the candidates that are available, that are running, like the vast majority of them, Ali, like, wait, I don't think like any of them haven't, like, I can't think of any of them right now that haven't.
I mean, isn't there just one guy who's like, yeah, but go ahead.
Let me make this point. Like, no, it's not one guy. There's a whole bunch of them now, right? Last time you talked, it was one guy. Now there's a whole bunch. But they're all with IRGC. Like, there is no mullahs. There is just military guys, right? And no reformers yet, okay, have announced. No part of the religious authority, just military people, all right? It's amazing. Like, there's so many of them now. And all of them, like, I mean, wait, is there any of them that is not IRGC? I can't think of any of them right now that is not IRGC. It's like, what is happening? Like, no hardliners, no reformers, just, I mean, technically these are hardliners, but not like traditional, like, religious mullahs. It's just like every single one of them is connected to, well, I don't know if every single one of them, but like, it seemed like, except maybe Saeed Jalili. Yeah, except maybe that guy. Every other one of them is like IRGC, okay? So, and here's another interesting thing. Some people say, we'll see if they're right about this. People are like, this election is a joke. It's going to be Saeed Mohammed. Mujtaba Khamenei has picked it. His father is almost openly endorsing this guy without mentioning his name based on everything he says. Like, he says the next president needs to be this, this, and this, and this, and this, and that. He needs to be young. He needs to be this. He needs to have said this. He needs to not have ever said anything like this. And we were like, looking at everybody, like, there's nobody left other than Saeed Mohammed, right? He almost openly is endorsing him. People are like, he's already picked. The president has already been picked, okay? So we'll see. We'll see how good these analysts are. If it's not Saeed Mohammed, then we're going to be more skeptical about these predictions that these analysts have in the future. Right now, saying it's already picked by Mujtaba Khamenei. It's going to be Saeed Mohammed, right? People are going to see the one thing that might completely throw out all these people's calculation out, we want to see which one of the reformists are going to step in. Maybe Zarif, who is the foreign minister, right? Is he going to step in, right? Whether the head of the communication, Jahrami, if he's going to step in, right? So here's the trick. If you're one of the people, hardliners, that is more in line. So the hardliners are divided, right? People don't understand. There is a silent majority of hardliners that are against Khamenei, and nobody ever hears of them because they have been so heavily suppressed, right? So, yeah, but those people are always trying to, like, come and take the leadership back, right? But seems like Khamenei is going to win. I'm not sure, though. But what was I saying? If a reformer runs, right? So if you're one of the people who's trying to see if you want to allow reformers in or not, because remember, Shorai Negahban, right? What do you call it? The guardian of the jurist, right? They have to allow who runs or not, right? Like, for example, Ahmadinejad wants to run again. A lot of people say he's not going to be allowed to run anyways.
Yeah, that's what you audition for. They do the auditions.
Yeah, they have to approve you, like, before you can run, yeah. Right? So, and those are picked by Khamenei. So you can see Khamenei is basically filtering, like, who gets to be able to even run as president. Like, yeah, sure, democracy. But the thing is that they want to put a candy, like a piece of candy for people to come and vote, right? But sometimes, and the candy is a reformist that people like, right? They might put like a Zarif there. I mean, people don't like him, but they need to put something for some people, some that is not like a hardliner. They might put like a, I think they wanted to put Jahrami there, but he's maybe like a little bit too young and he's 39. I think he's 1 year younger. Maybe he's not able to run. So I don't know. I heard that they might even bring one of Khomeini's grandchildren as a reformist. It's amazing because all of Khomeini's children and family have become reformists rather than hardliners. Things change.
Yeah.
But the risk is that every other times when they put the candy there for people to come and actually participate in the elections, the candy actually won, right? So they don't want that, right? So we're going to see if they're going to play with that or not, because this time so many people have promised not to participate in the elections. But they don't want the numbers. It's very interesting, Ali, because they want the numbers to be higher than United States.
Typically they are. The percentage of the turnout in Iran is usually pretty amazing.
Brag about that so much that if it drops below that, it's going to be embarrassing. Another thing, Ali, you know that guy, Dehqan? Okay, so the guy that you mentioned last time.
He
was the first guy. He was the first guy that came out of, like, he said, like, I'm running, okay? Yeah. He was a military person, and he's an advisor to Khamenei. Okay? So, guess what? He's the first person that officially mentioned a coup, right? So he officially he had like a TV presence and it was an interview, and in his announcement that he's running, he's the person that said, "Don't worry, it's not going to be a coup." And people are like, "Wait, what? A coup? Wait, like what? Like the fact that they're mentioning that this is not going to be a coup means that they're responding." He made it official that the mentioning of this is a coup is a legitimate thing that people are saying, right? Because here's the thing.
This is a lot of people stuff from those movies like Dumb and Dumber, where someone comes in and the guy just killed somebody, and they say, "Hey, what are you guys doing?" He's like, "Oh, nothing. I haven't killed anybody." Right.
Right.
It's like basic PR fail, yeah.
But like, here's the thing: like, when you're consuming these analysts, a lot of them are anti-government, and you don't know if this is a coup. I mean, people are like saying this is a coup. Like, are they just saying something like to just get media attention, or are they just like exaggerating things, right? But when you have the advisor to Khamenei, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody that high up when it comes into military efforts in Iran to come and says, "Here are the reasons why this is not going to be a coup." Then the coup allegations have some legitimacy behind them if this is the level that it's being addressed at, right? And an interesting thing is that this guy, okay, he might not even be seriously running. I don't know, okay? He might be paving the way for Saeed Mohammed, okay? Because he might be coming in to accept the first blow of, like, wait a minute, what happened to not having military people as president? What happened to Khomeini's warning about don't let military people in politics, right? Military people should stay in politics. Maybe like he came in to test the waters, accept the first blow, normalize military people in politics a little bit, deal with all the criticism, tell people why this is not the thing Khomeini warned about before. Because Khomeini is like God, right, in Iran, right? Like, you can't be like saying something like, "Oh, you can't say Khomeini was wrong." No, that's not going to fly. Nobody can say that, right? You can even say, like, I'm joking, but take the, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm not. You could get away with saying God is wrong more than you could get away with saying Khomeini was wrong. Like, yeah, I'm exaggerating.
Okay,
but,
okay.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, what's here? Do you want to hear what the excuses are?
No, yeah. The finish of the excuses, and then I want to, like, in the last 20 minutes, I actually want to talk about what that means, like, with what this paradigm shift means when you, anyway, when the hardliners are second tier and the reformists are, like, no tier. And the IRGC is at the top. So I'm very curious about what that looks like in terms of the percentage of the focus of Iran that's going to be nationalistic, what the religious element's going to be, and so on. But go ahead with the excuses. Finish what you're saying, then let's move on to that.
Right. So some people are saying, like, well, listen, these people can run for presidency and they could just resign from their military position and then run for presidency. so that's going to be like, well, they're not military anymore. There you go. Right. I mean, that's weird because I don't think Khomeini suggested that military people, I mean, these people are going to still have all their connections and their loyalties are going to be to the IRGC. And nobody, when the rules were military people don't run for president, the assumption was not that, oh, yeah, because if they're going to be president, they're also going to keep their positions in the military. Of course they're going to resign. Like, when they were warning about this before, this is something that they warned about. Also, they say, like, look at the performance of the reformers versus their performance of the IRGC, right? Like, look at the industry economy in Iran. Look at the car industry. Look at the manufacturing. All of the things that were under the presidency, they're all crap. But look at, we can't build cars, but we're building the most advanced missiles because the missiles are under IRGC. Like, they're saying IRGC gets stuff done, right? They're organized. They have military mindset of getting things done, organized, no bolt BS, no politics, straight to the point. So there's like, you need that kind of a mindset to come fix Iran's economy and everything else, right? That's what they say. Another thing is very interesting is that a lot of other people who say that, a lot of people who are on the anti-Islam, but for Pahlavi, like the Shah, the monarchy before the Islamic Revolution, who are now are warming up to the Islamic Republic because it's bringing back the glory and all that stuff. They're saying that, why are you guys complaining about the military getting involved? We are the same people who say Reza Shah, Ruhat Shah. He was a military guy. Look, he managed to completely reform Iran's economy, and he was great for Iran's economy. That's what we need. So it's interesting because a lot of anti-Islamic, pro-monarchy people in Iran saying, like, yeah, maybe, and they actually like it because they seem like, wait, you're saying more IRGC, more military people, less mullahs? Yes, please, right? They're like, maybe this is the best transition to get away from a theocracy. Maybe a little bit, maybe, I know this is non-democratic, more authoritarian, but maybe this is the transition away from a theocracy to what we imagine of something better, right? Okay. So some people are suggesting that, you go on.
That's what I was gonna ask you. That's what I was gonna get into. Because you had the hardliners that were really, really theocracy, you know, the big theocracy thing. Then you had the reformists who were kind of more into the republic part of the Islamic Republic, right? And then you have these IRGC people. What is that going to look like when they rule everything, right? When the supreme leader is beholden to them, the president's beholden to them, and everybody's beholden to them? Is it like, because there's no perfect analogy for this, but like if I think about Egypt, right? In Egypt, like, remember the Muslim Brotherhood got elected. And then, you know, they were taken out by the military, and then Sisi's a military guy who came in. Is it going to be like a secular military? Well, not secular, but a military.
Okay. We don't even know what's going to happen in 3 months. Okay. So.
No. I'm not talking about the legit. We've talked about all of the possibilities of what could happen logistically, but I'm saying just ideologically, what does the Iranian government look like? Does it look like the hardline religious thing? Does it look like a military thing, which tends to lean more nationalistic and, you know, Iranian pride? Or does it, like, you know what I mean?
Right. So the idealistically,
how strong is the religion aspect now?
With IRGC, it's strong. It's strong. Okay. Right. So here's the thing. Depends on how, what you compare it to. Okay.
Okay.
IRGC is more, way more religious and idealistic than the Artesh. Okay. However, in the past couple of years, there's telltale signs that shows that the IRGC recognizes that it needs to play into people's nationalism sometimes, not just their religious, right?
Right.
Aspect, right? They named, like, they have, like, there are many telltale signs, right? Well, one of the funniest ones is that they used to name their missiles after Imam Hussein, Ali, Nahjul Balaghe, Zulfiqar, religious stuff like that, right? Now they're naming their missiles after Shahnameh stuff, Seymour, like stuff pre-Islamic Zoroastrian, like they're like, I don't know, nationalistic pre-Islamic stuff. They're like, why, like, you know, why are they naming their missiles?
If you want to know where Iran is going ideologically in terms of drumming up its people, look at the missiles. How are they naming their missiles?
See, it's like, you know,
the
way
the U.S. names its hurricanes, right?
Right.
Always female names. They're always female. It's interesting.
You can see that, like, the IRGC is a lot more, might be more flexible, because for them it's about power and control more, you know, like, and if it's Islam that gets them there, we'll go with that, right? If it's, like, nationalism that gets us there, we'll go with that.
So that kind of dynamic is more in line with the kind of thing that, you know, Saddam Hussein, Mubarak, right. some of these dictators used to do is that whatever gets the people united in a way that this person could rile them up and they wouldn't turn up against him, right? So someone got so religious that they're like, you know, I'm going to go up against a secular dictator, then they'd trounce them. On the other hand, if people were becoming more secular, then they would use nationalism as a uniting force, right? Like, so for instance, like,
you could do both. You could do to different audiences, different songs to different. Well,
this is the thing. This is just, I want the audience to know, this is one dynamic that works, is that, you know, you can have this uprising, like the 2009, 2019, 2020 protests, right? They come up and people are against the Islamic part of things, right? They're like, we don't like this theocracy. And then from the outside, there's a foreign threat to Iran. And then the leaders of Iran start drumming up the nationalist thing that we have to rise up against this foreign threat because we are Iran. And suddenly the people are now with the leaders in a way. Like, it kind of happened in Iraq as well. I mean, this kind of thing.
Yeah, we don't. By the way, just to be clear, we don't know what's going to happen. These are the directions that things might go. There are two main things that I want to touch on. Very important things, right?
Yeah.
So if you look at the name of what the government in Iran is called, the Islamic Republic, right? For 40 years, a lot of people have pointed out that how that's a contradiction. You know, so you can't, is it because for 1200 years there has been an ideological battle between different people with different philosophical background from the Islamic world debating where, you know, how could you can't have government by the people, because the government, the rule, law comes from God, like, you know, so saying something is Islamic and a republic at the same time is contradictory, because you either have to abide by the rules of God or by the rules of people. So this whole this was a contradiction, and the whole concept of a republic is a, you know, so democracy is an ancient concept, goes back to ancient Greece, but the structure of a republic is a modern concept. It's a European concept, right? So we have a lot of monarchists in Iran that when they look at an Islamic republic, they hate both of those. They like, we hate both Islam and the fact that it's a republic, right? So they're like, we want everything to be fully Iranian. And if you look at the name Islamic Republic, Islamic is Arab, Republic is European, right? These are all foreign invasions of Iranian culture. Iranian culture means monarchy, right?
I never thought of it that way before. So yeah, right. Islamic is Arab and Republic, yeah, is European. And
Iran is inherently the land of the Shahs. And of the kings, and this is we be kings, we was kings basically, right? That's what they call it.
Yeah, like, Khomeini like influenced a lot by Plato, like Plato's Republic, like the whole philosopher king thing. I mean, that's where the whole idea of Velayat-e Faqih.
Don't open that door. Entire Islamic history is influenced by Hellenistic ideas, especially Neoplatonism and Aristotle.
Yeah, I'm not going to open that.
So here's the thing. A lot of these monarchists who are now supporting the IRGC, one thing that they say now is like, this is good because they want an authoritarian regime, right? They don't want democracy. They want a king, right? And they're like, you know what IRGC is doing is IRGC is now removing the republic part. Like, they don't want to have a presidency. Like, you know what? We're going to take over the presidency now with Syed Muhammad and basically completely make it, you know, if we wish it wasn't there, but now that it's there, let's take over, right? Right? Yeah. So they're like, if the IRGC manages to take over the presidency, we manage to get rid of the republic part of the Islamic Republic. We could worry about the Islamic part later. Right now, let's focus on the republic part of it. And they're like, look, there's another thing that they like is like, if Mujtaba Khamenei becomes the next supreme leader, the suggestion that the supreme leader position is looking more and more like a king rather than a religious leader is, it would basically be like, look, we were right. All these years that we were telling that Khamenei is playing the role of a king, more of a religious leader. If he manages to get his son in power, it proves that we were right all these years. So they're like, we're becoming more and more. And they also keep bragging about how Islamic Republic is the map of its influence in Lebanon, Syria, Yemen right now, Iraq. It looks like the Sassanid Empire, right? They're like, look, we're bringing back the pre-Islamic Sassanid Empire. So this is the reasons why some of these people like that again, right? So that's thing I want.
Yeah, right? Go ahead. And second thing.
And this is a growing movement that a lot of people shouldn't be ignoring. Another thing I want to mention is that the IRGC seems to be, again, this is a guess, don't take my words for it, but some people are suggesting that you see every time the U.S. and Zarif suggest that they're going to be talking about the nuclear situation, right, the nuclear deal, it seems like the IRGC keeps poking so that the deal... no communication happens under this administration. They're waiting. They're like, wait until we are in power. Nobody talks to this administration. We are the people you deal with, right? So they want to give the United States excuses to say, we're not going to talk with you because look what you're doing, right? So why would we talk to Iran's government when they attacked here, they attacked there, right? So they want to give the United States government excuses to continue stalemate, not talking to Iran over nuclear weapons by making sure they poke every time something happens, right? So they want to tell also Rouhani and Zarif to just shut up. You guys are already lost. You guys are already like insignificant. This idea of trying to get a deal through before your term is over, we're not going to let that happen. So that's another thing, right? One other element that you to take into account is that some people are wondering if the next president is part of IRGC, how is that going to look for international relationships? Because, it's one thing to be a state sponsor of terror, okay? Here's the thing. A lot of people don't understand the significance between being a terrorist organization or just being a government that is a state sponsor of terror, right? If you are a terrorist organization, you become untouchable by many, many people, right? Even within Iran, right? Because if somebody deals with somebody that dealt with a terrorist organization, they become like, people are like, oh my God, I don't want my finances to be deal, like, because then people are not going to deal with you. Like, you're going to be marked by United States. And if you're marked by FATF or any other terrorist watch group out there, then working with you becomes very toxic, because you're being watched right now. You know what I mean? So it's funny, because some people who United States put a sanction on as a terrorist, people are like, why would I care? I'm not dealing with the United States. Well, you don't understand. You can't deal with other people also that are dealing with people that are dealing with the United States. So even some people that you deal with, like, it's multiple degrees of separation. Like, it's hard. Like, you are going to suffer financially, even if don't have any direct relationship with the United States, right? It's a very tight, like, being considered a terrorist organization, United States still has a lot of economic power around the world for that to become a devastating, like, it's like suffocating, United States, like, financially suffocating for you to be labeled as a terrorist organization by United States, right? Yeah. It's less suffocating for you to be a state sponsor of terror, okay? You cannot, United States never goes, hasn't so far until recently, hasn't gone and made an entire government to be considered a terrorist organization, right? Because it would be too much for United States, like, it would alienate United States. Because imagine if United States says that you can't deal with people who deal with this government, like, for multiple degrees, like, people are like, okay, we're going to start ignoring United States more now, right? So it's one thing for United States to say this organization, like, let's say ISIS or Al-Qaeda, or I don't know, Hezbollah is a terrorist group, but not United States will mark a government as a state sponsor of terror, but not a terrorist organization itself, right? Recently, however, Pompeo did that with the Houthis, who weren't officially the government in Yemen. However, they were technically the government, and that was a very bad move, because that would stop the peace negotiations and also all the humanitarian groups that wanted to deal in Yemen, because the Houthis were not officially the government, but technically the government. It made it so harder for so many groups, humanitarian groups, to be able to get aid to Yemen. So it's a good thing that the Biden administration undid that, even though the Houthis are garbage organization and they're horrible and they're terrorist group. It technically doesn't make sense to label a government as a terrorist organization. Now, coming back to Iran, Iran is considered a space sponsor of terror. However, the IRGC is considered a terrorist group. So what happens when it comes to international relationships with Iran?
Wait, the IRGC is or is not?
Is, yeah, a terrorist group. So what happens if the IRGC, who's labeled as a terrorist group, now becomes part of the presidency? How is that going to affect international relationships with Iran? I don't know, but it's something to consider.
They'll deal with them like they dealt with they were prepared to deal with the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, that's how it happens. Like,
Muslim Brotherhood is not officially...
officially, but even if it was, right? I mean, the thing is that there are...
It would have to be removed.
Yeah, you deal with it. So, we're out of time right now. This is really fascinating. I'm really curious about, and maybe we'll revisit this a few times before the election. The election is in June, so I'm really interested. I mean, you talk about the presidency a lot here, and which is totally fascinating. But I kind of feel like, you know, presidency in Iran, sure, it's something, but it doesn't really mean as much. I think the really interesting dynamic here is the circumcision of the role of the supreme leader, right? Which, fine, it may have already happened and it may be like that, maybe the status quo, but the fact that it's really coming out in the open, it's so obvious now, I think that's a part of it that's really interesting and transformative to me as a non-Iranian outsider. But I wanted to, just tell everybody, I thought this was a fascinating episode. If you like what you're hearing, please go to patreon.com/sjme. You can become a patron for as little as $1 a month. And over there, if you join up, you can watch all of these conversations live on video streams. You can watch us. You can ask questions live and have those questions answered and everything like that too. If you can't become a patron, that's not an issue. All of our episodes are released publicly, the audio versions. You can totally, you know, go to iTunes and give us a rating, or you can share it on your social media channels. Please hit the subscribe button, hit the bell so you're notified whenever we have a new episode out. And stay tuned for Friday morning at 8 a.m., right? Mm. Eastern time, we're going to have Maryam Namazi on, and we're going to be talking about when women leave Islam and the new documentary that her group has made about women leaving Islam.
If you also, any of our top patrons, if you want to have any private conversations with us, we have made that available to our top tier patrons. If you want to have any questions or any advice or any, but we also, you could also arrange public ones for our lower tier patrons as well. So that's also available. Link is in the description.
Right. Okay, guys. Thank you very much. See you on Friday with Maryam Namazi.
All right. Bye, guys.
The secular jihadists have been made possible thanks to the Illuminati and the covert support of Israel and the CIA. That's what we have been told, but we haven't received our checks yet. If you like what we do, please support us. Share the podcast with your friends. Write and tweet us with topic and guest suggestions. Or head over to secularjihadists.com and give a dollar or more for exclusive access to live video. Have your questions read and answered on the air and more. Till next time, may the flying spaghetti monster be with you. Thank you.